Well, good morning and welcome to our continuing Bible study in the book of Daniel. Enjoyed that hymn we just sang, and you know, the book of Daniel points to the finished work of Christ. It's Messiah the Prince, cut off, but not for himself. And you know, in Daniel chapter 1, we were introduced to the Lord Adonai, the sovereign ruler, and we looked at all the, you know, there was a lot of prophecies concerning the captivity that said that because of the fall and sin and the rebellion of Israel, that they were going to be captive to the Babylonians. But that's not really the main theme of Daniel. The main theme of Daniel is Christ and him crucified. And as we look through, as we go through Daniel, we in today's book, chapter 2, Nebuchadnezzar has a dream, and it's about all these kingdoms that are, including his and the ones that would follow. And we find that everything is according to God's purpose. That's what we learned in chapter 1, that God caused the Chaldeans to come in and take Jerusalem, and then we find all these succession of kingdoms that are going to come after him, the Medo-Persians, and then the Greeks, and then the Romans. And so each one of those has a specific purpose in God's determinate counsel. We find the Romans, their method of execution for heinous crimes was the crucifixion. The Jews, their method of execution was stoning. And as we look back to Moses, as Moses lifted up the serpent in the wilderness, so must the Son of Man be lifted up. That must be fulfilled in a very specific way. And so we find in this chapter that the Romans are going to come into power. And so everything's working according to God's purpose and according to his will and determinate counsel. And, you know, in each chapter, we're introduced to a new expression of God, as we'll call it. In the first chapter, he was Adonai, the sovereign ruler. Today, in this lesson, he's called Elohim, the God of heaven. And so each chapter, we find a new expression of Christ. And also, we'll find later on the Messiah the Prince. And in chapter 3, it's the one like unto the Son of Man, and all these different forms that we have. We're brought a little bit more information and about the gospel and about Christ in each chapter. And also in chapter 2, about midway through chapter 2, I think verse 4, the first four verses are in translated from Hebrew, and then chapter 2 verse 4 or 5 from there on till somewhere in chapter 7 it's translated from Aramaic, which was the Chaldean language. And all the names of God are Chaldean variations on the Hebrew names of God, so they're a little bit different, but they're, when you look them up, they all the references back to the Hebrew idiom for the whichever name of God is being being presented. So all the names and attributes in God in these texts are kind of Chaldean version of them. So, and then as we get to some things that we ought to pay attention to in chapter 2 is that, as I mentioned, I think, in the introduction and last lesson, that the book of Daniel is not linear. It's not a chronological step by step. In chapter one, we had kind of a broad overview of the first 3 years. Remember, they were brought into captivity, and the king said, fatten them up for 3 years and then bring them in. Well, the 3 years was up at the end of chapter one, and they were brought in, and none were found so wise and fair as Daniel and his three companions. And if we think back to the beginning, where we said they would have been 12 or 15 at the time of the captivity, 3 years has gone by, and they would have been 18-ish or thereabouts, and they would have been young men. And so chapter one ended kind of vaguely with the 3 years of preparation of the Hebrew youths completed, and they were supposed to be taught in all the Chaldean tongue and customs and laws and whatnot. And in chapter one it said, and as for these four children, God gave them knowledge and skill in all learning and wisdom, Daniel 1:17. And Daniel had understanding in all visions and dreams. Well, that's kind of those dreams haven't happened yet in chapter one. It's just kind of a broad overview, kind of like we mentioned in Genesis. We have the creationist account in chapter one, and then chapter two fills in some details. Well, that's the same thing we find in Daniel here. In Daniel 1:18, now at the end of the days that the king had said he should bring them in, then the prince of the eunuchs brought them in before Nebuchadnezzar, and the king communed with them. So they had a relationship. He communed with them, it says, and among them all was found none like Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. They were beyond compare with all of the rest of the Hebrew children that were brought, and even among his own wise men and counselors and the magicians and sorcerers, they call them, there was none equal to them. And in all matters of wisdom and understanding that the king inquired of them, so here it says that he inquired of them some things, he found them 10 times better than all the magicians and astrologers that were in all his realm. So that sets the stage. Now in chapter 2, we're going to go back in time in this 3-year period, and we're going to look at one of these times that the king inquired of Daniel and his companions. So in Daniel chapter 2, verse 1, we have this dream that Nebuchadnezzar has. But he wakes up in the morning and he says, man, I had a dream and it was really troubling, but I can't remember for the life of me what it was about. But I remember somehow it stuck in me that it was real important. Well, that was God working in him according to his determinate counsel. He caused that dream to happen, and he also would cause Daniel to be able to know what that dream was and interpret it. It's just really a fascinating story, because when Daniel prays to God for what this is all about, because his life is at risk here, God gives him the answer in a night vision, and he is so confident in that he says, okay, I'm ready, I can go to the king now, and if I get it wrong, he's going to cut my head off. But he's so confident that that never enters into the equation. So it's really an interesting chapter here. And so he had this dream, a prophetic dream that could have only come to him by the decree and purpose of Almighty God. And it was a dream, again, that he couldn't remember, but it was serious enough for him to try to use whatever was available to him to try and get to the bottom of it, as they say. And and then we find his resources, his human resources, the things that he had available to him in this world, they could not produce an answer. They couldn't produce an answer regarding a spiritual thing. Neither could they know them, because it was spiritually discerned. It's what it tells us in Corinthians. Isn't that interesting? So we're going to read there through Daniel, and then we're going to go back and comment as we go. So in the second year of the reign of Nebuchadnezzar, and he in this first year, he took Jerusalem for that final time. He'd actually been kind of the ruler for, I think, some years, because he was kind of co-regent with his Nabopolassar, his father. But the way that the Babylonians kept track of when a king's reign started was when he actually took complete control, and the Hebrews said, well, he was actually in charge a couple of years before that. But anyway, here we have the second year of the reign of Nebuchadnezzar, and Nebuchadnezzar dreamed dreams wherewith his spirit was troubled and his sleep break from him. And this is, it kind of gives us the plural of dreams here. He dreamed dreams, so more than one. But we have a record of this one here right now. Then the king commanded to all of the magicians and the astrologers and the sorcerers and the Chaldeans for to show the king his dreams. So they came and stood before the king. He said, hey, you guys are magicians, you're wise, and you should be able to tell me the answer to that. Then spake the Chaldeans to the king in Syriac or Aramaic. Now, there's one thing that we might pay attention to here is that as we mentioned in chapter 1, verse 17, Daniel and his companions were accorded a place among the magicians and sorcerers and astrologers, as well as the Chaldeans. And so the term Chaldean here is used, it was a nationalistic term for the nation of them, but it was also referred to kind of a sect of them, like in the Hebrews, we had the Sadducees and we had the Pharisees and the Essenes and these different sects. But this one sect of Chaldeans was kind of majored in astrology and applying that and other unlawful arts, I think the commentary said. And those were common in that country because they had all these different gods that they worshiped, moon gods and vegetable gods and rain gods and all the various gods that they had. And so keep that in mind. So Daniel was placed in a position kind of on a level with those magicians, sorcerers, astrologers, and Chaldeans. And so the king said unto them, once they came into his palace and approached him, the king said unto them, there in verse 5 of chapter 2, or verse 4, then spake the Chaldeans to the 3, I mean, the king said to them, I dreamed a dream, and my spirit was troubled to know the dream. And then spake the Chaldeans to the king in Syriac, O king, live forever. And they say that, but they didn't really mean it. It's like, nobody lived forever, so they knew that. Live forever. Tell thy servants the dream, and we'll show you the interpretation. Oh, yeah, if you give us a kind of a clue, it's kind of like a dial astrology 1-800-something-something, and they say, well, tell us a little bit about yourself. And then they would give them the answer. And the king answered to these Chaldeans, he says, the thing is gone from me. You ever had a dream like that? You know, you had a dream in the night, and then you wake up. You say, man, I had a dream, but now it's gone. The thing is gone from me. If you will not make known unto me the dream with the interpretation thereof, you shall be cut in pieces, and your houses shall be made a dunghill. That's a pretty serious. And him being the sovereign ruler of the Chaldeans and Babylon, that was going to occur. There would not be any relief from that. But if you show the dream and the interpretation of it, you shall receive of me gifts and rewards and great honor. Therefore, show me the dream and the interpretation thereof. And they answered again and said, let the king tell his servants the dream, and we will show you the interpretation of it. And the king answered and said, I know of a certainty that you would gain the time. What he's saying here is you're stalling. Put up or shut up. You're stalling. Because you see the thing is gone from me. But if you will not make known unto me the dream, there is but one decree for you, for you have prepared lying and corrupt words to speak before me till the time be changed. And they were hoping that time would pass and the news cycle would change and something else would come up to distract him. And they said, if we just put him off long enough, he'll forget about it. Therefore, tell me the dream, and I shall know that you can show me the interpretation thereof. And the Chaldeans answered before the king and said, there's not a man on the earth that can show the king's matter. Therefore, there's no king, lord, or ruler that asks such things at any magician, astrologer, or Chaldean. And it's a rare thing that the king requireth, and there is none other that can show it before the king except the gods, the little g gods, whose dwelling is not with flesh. For this cause the king was very angry and very furious. And he commanded to destroy all the wise men of Babylon. And remember Daniel in chapter 1, we learn in verse 17 that Daniel and his companions were kind of lumped in, that they were all painted with that same brush. So this kind of applied to them. So the decree went forth that the wise men should be slain. And they sought Daniel and his fellows to be slain. And apparently, this is kind of, we're reading between the lines here. But when the king sent for the wise men, the astrologers, the magicians, and the Chaldeans to interpret this dream, they said, well, let's not tell Daniel about it. Let's just go ourselves, because we'll look like the smart ones, and we won't let that nasty Hebrew guy that's wiser than all of us be involved. So then it doesn't work out well for them. So the king's captain goes out to round all these guys up and kill them. And they sought Daniel and his fellows to be slain. And then Daniel answered with counsel and wisdom to Arioch, the captain of the king's guard, which was gone forth to slay the wise men of Babylon. And he answered and said to Arioch, the king's captain, why is the decree so hasty from the king? What's all the hubbub, bub? Why are you going to kill all of us? And so Arioch made the thing known to Daniel. So we can imply from that he didn't know anything about it and was kind of taken by surprise. Then Daniel went in and desired of the king. So he had this ability. Remember, Daniel was well favored to the king, and the king kind of liked him. So he was able to go into the king and say, what's up with this? And he desired of the king that he would give him time and that he would show the king the interpretation. And so Daniel, he was well favored, it told us in chapter 1, by the king. So then Daniel went to his house and made the thing known to Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, his companions. So this is their Hebrew names here in chapter 2, at the beginning of chapter 2. So he says, we're going to be killed if we don't come up with this dream and the interpretation. And they said, it's just a basic principle of grace that you can't just come up with this stuff on your own. They said, there's only one place we can go, and that's to the God of heaven. And they would desire the mercies of the God of heaven concerning this secret, that Daniel and his fellows should not perish with the rest of the wise men from Babylon. So it's interesting, the verbiage and what they say here. There's the risk of death here. There's the certainty of death here. And what do they want? They want the mercy of the God of heaven, that they not perish. Then was the secret revealed to Daniel in a night vision. Then Daniel blessed the God of heaven. This same word again we find here, the Elohim in the Aramaic, that's the, it turns out that's Allah, like the Muslims would use the base word of it. the one that's ascended, that's what that in the Aramaic, that's what that word means. And Daniel answered and said, "Blessed be the name of God forever, for wisdom and might are his. And he changes the times and the seasons. He removeth kings and setteth up kings. And he giveth wisdom unto the wise and knowledge to them that know understanding. He revealeth the deep and secret things. He knoweth what is in the darkness, and the light dwelleth with him." Boy, what a description Daniel had for a young man regarding that. That only came to him by revelation. That did not come from learning. And we know that he spent some time in whatever roles that they had, because later on we learned that he says, "I learned by the role, by the books, that captivity time is about up at 70 years." So he had access to some scripture there, and even when he was a young man, he probably spent some time in some exposure to that. He says, "I thank thee and praise thee, O God of my fathers, who has given me wisdom." He already knew some things. He said, "He's given me wisdom and might, and has made known unto me now what we desired of thee, for thou hast made known unto us the king's matter." It's revelation, just like grace. "Therefore Daniel went into Arioch, whom the king had ordered to destroy the wise men of Babylon, and he went and said unto him, 'Destroy not the wise men of Babylon. Bring me in there before the king, and I will show the king the interpretation.'" Now this next part is interesting, because Arioch goes into the king and says, "I," capital I. Isn't that what we find in religion about I, I've done this, I've done that. He said, "I have found somebody that can solve your problem. I'm the one that should get the accolades, because I have delivered." And Arioch brought in Daniel before the king in haste and said thus unto him, "I have found a man of the captives of Judah that will make known unto the king the interpretation." And the king answered and said to Daniel, whose name, and here we go into the Aramaic term, his name was, remember, it was changed to Belteshazzar from Daniel, servant of some Babylonian god. "Art thou able to make known unto me the dream which I have seen and the interpretation thereof?" I just love that, you know, when we, this part is so crucial here, because it just brings to mind that when God reveals grace to you, you can't unknow it. And you're supremely confident in it, because you know that it all depends on Him, and He is taken care of. He's the author and finisher of your faith. He's the Alpha and Omega, the captain of our salvation. All these things that you can't unknow once you've experienced grace and a new birth. Daniel goes into the king with that same confidence. Daniel answered in the presence of the king and said, "The secret which the king hath demanded cannot the wise men and the astrologers and the magicians and the soothsayers show unto the king. This can't be revealed by man." It's what Jesus said. "Flesh and blood have not revealed this unto you, but my Father which is in heaven. But there is a God in heaven that revealeth secrets." He reveals grace. He reveals his Son, turns out, as we find out in the scriptures. "And make known unto the king Nebuchadnezzar what shall be in the latter days. Thy dream and the visions of thy head upon thy bed are these." And boy, people start from right there, the latter days thing, and then they go off into all this eschatological stuff, and then they try to use all the formulas and calculations here to determine when the end times are going to be. So if you follow that out to its logical conclusion, it makes no sense. What then? What's the consequence of that? What's the logical sequence of events if you did know that? What are you going to do? Okay, I don't need to get saved until like the last second. Or I have until this day to do the regular things that I want to do, and then at the end I'll reform and repent. Whatever they're thinking is, it makes no sense, and it just denies the things that Daniel really truly reveals here. So he said, "Here's your dream and the interpretation. As for thee, O king, thy thoughts came into thy mind upon thy bed, what should come to pass hereafter. And he that revealeth secrets makes known unto thee what shall come to pass. But as for me, this secret was not revealed to me for any wisdom that I have more than any living, but for their sakes that shall make known the interpretation to the king, and that thou mightest know the thoughts of thy heart." He says, this is not to glorify myself. Isn't that what the scripture said? When did we do that? This just comes from grace. This just comes from God. I didn't have anything to do with it. I didn't study up on it or anything. God just revealed it to me. He says, "O king," verse 31 of Daniel chapter 2, "thou sawest, and behold, a great image. This great image, whose brightness was excellent, stood before thee, and the form thereof was terrible. And the image's head was of fine gold, the breast and his arms of silver, his belly and his thighs of brass, his legs of iron, and his feet part of iron and part of clay. And thou sawest till that a stone," and there's some more gospel coming at you right here, "a stone was cut out without hands, which smote the image on his feet that were of iron and clay, and brake them to pieces. Then was the iron, the clay, the brass, the silver, the gold broken to pieces together, and became like the chaff of the summer threshing floors, and the wind carried them away, that no place was found for them. And the stone that smote the image became a great mountain and filled the whole earth. The stone that the builders rejected has become the head of the corner." And Jesus said, "Whomever will fall on this stone will be broken, but whoever this stone falls on them, they'll be ground to powder." That's from Luke chapter 20. And he says, "Well, this is a dream, and we'll tell the interpretation thereof before the king. Thou, king, art a great king of kings, for the Lord, for the God of heaven hath given thee a kingdom, power and strength and glory." He attributes it all to God there. "And that wheresoever the children of man dwell, the beasts of the field and the fowls of heaven, hath he given into thine hand and made thee ruler over them all. Thou art this head of gold. And after thee shall rise another kingdom inferior to thee, and another third kingdom of brass, which shall bear rule over all the earth. And the fourth kingdom shall be strong as iron, for as much as iron breaketh in pieces and subdueth all things, as iron breaketh all these, shall it break in pieces and bruise. And whereas thou saw the feet and toes, part of potter's clay and part of iron, the kingdom shall be divided, but there shall be in it the strength of iron, for as much as thou sawest the iron mixed with miry clay. And the toes of the feet were part iron and part of clay, so the kingdom shall be partly strong and partly broken. And whereas thou saw the iron mixed with miry clay, they shall mingle themselves with the seed of men, but they shall not cleave to one another, even as iron is not mixed with clay." I like the NIV translation of that. Let me turn to there and... in Daniel 2:43, "Just as you saw the iron mixed with baked clay, so the people will be a mixture and will not remain united any more than iron mixes with clay." So it's just talking about as that particular part has reference to the Roman Empire, was it was comprised of nations and people from all over, and they set up Roman kind of supervisors in each one of them, but a lot of them, they all had their own kings and rulers, as long as they paid tribute and revenue to Rome and didn't break any Roman laws or cause a problem, they were pretty much left to their own devices for religion and local affairs, but they were a province of Rome there, so but they wouldn't stick together because they were all just slaves under the Roman Empire, and they didn't really have anything in common other than that one attribute. So in the days, in verse 44, and in the days of these kings, and all those kings have came and went, so we know that during this time, this next thing happens. In the days of these kings shall the God of heaven set up a kingdom which shall never be destroyed, and the kingdom shall not be left to other people, but it shall break in pieces and consume all these kingdoms, and it shall stand forever. For as much as thou saw that the stone was cut out of the mountain without hands, and that it break in pieces the iron, the brass, the clay, the silver, the gold, the great God hath made known unto the king what shall come to pass hereafter. And the dream is certain, and the interpretation thereof sure. He was just supremely, he was absolutely confident in this. And he saw it, it was revealed to him, and he couldn't unknow it. He couldn't be dissuaded of it, just like grace. Then the king Nebuchadnezzar fell on his face and worshipped Daniel. Not worshipped in the sense that we would worship God, but he paid him honor. He had an honorific placed on him, and commanded that they should offer an oblation and sweet odors to him. And the king answered unto Daniel and said, "Of a truth, that your God is a capital G God of little g gods." So in his mind, the Hebrew God was just another one of the many gods that he thought existed. But he said this one seemed to have a little more potency than some of these other ones. Your God is a God of gods and a capital L Lord of little k kings. And a revealer of secrets, saying that thou could reveal this secret. Boy, when Daniel told him that dream, he says, that was it. That was the dream that I had. And it was because God had caused that to happen. A revealer of secrets, saying that thou could reveal this secret. Then the king, now here's an important part here, that says Daniel, he made Daniel a great man, and offered him many gifts, and made him ruler over all the whole province of Babylon, and the chief of the governors over all the wise men of Babylon. Then Daniel requested of the king, and he set Shadrach, before we had their Hebrew names, now we have the Syriac, Aramaic names, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego over the affairs of the province of Babylon, but Daniel sat in the gate of the king. So Daniel was made a pretty important fellow, which the soothsayers and magicians, astrologers, and the locals didn't think that was that wonderful. It's kind of just a parallel to the book of Esther. Almost same scenario, only Esther takes place in the Babylonian province of Elam, in the city capital of Shushan, which is just a little southeast of, it's on that map that I gave you here previously. So we have time for a few comments here on this that we just written and or read rather, and the thing that we really want to focus on is the in this image that he had, the head of, he says, you are this head of gold, because God has given you a kingdom and power and might over all the the area that of the world that he's given you control and power over. He says, after you will come an inferior nation. That would be the Medo-Persians that we're going to be introduced here in chapter 3. Darius the Mede and Cyrus the Persian. Then after that comes the Brass, which is fulfilled by Alexander the Great, which conquered all of that area. And then after him comes the Romans. So we have the four elements of the image covered in these four kingdoms. And the interesting thing comes up at the beginning of chapter 3. And Nebuchadnezzar says, oh, I have a head of gold. And then he says, but we can't have all these other nations that take over. So he makes a statue and he says, let's make it all of gold. He says, I won't make a statue that represents the image. He says, because the image says that I'm going to be cut off and somebody else is going to take over, and then they're going to be cut off and somebody else is going to take over, and then they're going to be cut off and somebody else is going to take over, and then the whole thing's going to be obliterated by the stone cut without hands, which is none other than the stone which the builders rejected, the Christ, the Messiah the Prince. So he says, I know, let's build a statue that's all of gold, since the gold head represents me. We'll just morph that on down into the rest of me, of the image, and then that'll do away with the part I don't like. Isn't that how religious stuff? Isn't that amazing that, oh yeah, I don't like this part of God. I know that it says God in the Bible, but from there on down, I don't like any of it, so let's just change it according to my belief of how things should go. So just a good metaphor there for a natural man and how he does things. Just we'll just fix that. And so we have this introduction to the Messiah, the stone cut without hands, and so as we get to verse 44 there, and in these days shall the God of heaven set up a kingdom. And we kind of mentioned that briefly earlier, that each one of these kingdoms had a purpose. Greek turns out to be the most precise language in almost the entire universe of the world spoke Greek. What a perfect language, and so precise for the spread of the gospel. Nobody spoke universal Hebrew, but practically everybody knew a little Greek, and they had that Koine Greek, which is your common Greek that they spoke. So what better language could there be to spread the gospel through, and then the Greek language, which Alexander had from Africa all the way over to India and all the way north. He'd conquered much of the known world by the time he was, 25? So Greek culture was everywhere. And then we have the Romans being made to come into play. And so in verse 44, in the days of these kings shall God of heaven set up a kingdom which will never be destroyed. And in Acts chapter 4, verse 24, and Norman will probably be in Acts chapter 4, turn of the century. And when they heard that, they lifted up their voice to God with one accord and said, Lord, thou art God, which has made heaven and earth and the sea and all that is in them. Isn't that what Daniel just pretty much said, that word for word in his account. Who by the mouth of thy servant David had said, why did the heathen rage and the people imagine vain things, like making a whole statue out of gold instead of the head? The kings of the earth stood up, and the rulers were gathered together against the Lord and against his Christ. For of a truth, against this holy child Jesus, whom thou hast anointed, both Herod and Pontius Pilate with the Gentiles and the people of Israel were gathered together. So we got the Greeks and the Romans, the Jews, all the Gentiles gathered together to do whatsoever thy hand and thy counsel determined before to be done. So if we look at my little stick man chart there, and you can see about when this occurred, Daniel would have been about 18. You don't have to do that, but I was just saying a long time before Messiah the Prince is cut off on that chart. You'll see that over there in 30 AD. And we're back in the 500 BC category here on our time chart. All this had been predetermined and according to God's purpose to do whatsoever thy hand and counsel determined before to be done. That Messiah the Prince should come. That Messiah the Prince should be cut off. That Messiah the Prince should be lifted up as Moses lifted up the serpent in the wilderness. That Messiah the Prince would take on himself the sins of all his people of all time, pay the penalty in their place on the cross, the stone cut without hands, and all these other kingdoms would be brought to naught. And nobody likes that. I'm sure those Hebrew people said, well, our nation's never going to come to naught. And then one day they were surrounded by the Assyrians, and then another time they were surrounded by the Babylonians, and then still later on in the book of Daniel chapter 9, he says later on you're going to be surrounded by the Romans, and it's going to be awful beyond belief. I think they said in Daniel they were besieged 30 months before they surrendered and got taken off captive. So 30 months, that's pretty near 3 years. That's a long time to go without being closed up in a small place. The stone cut without hands. Isaiah 8:13, and Norm mentioned this, that Peter quotes this in his Gospels. Isaiah 8:13, sanctify the Lord of hosts himself, and let him be your fear, and him be your dread, and he shall be for a sanctuary, but for a stone of stumbling, and a rock of offense to both the houses of Israel and Aegean, and for a snare to the inhabitants of Jerusalem. It's this dichotomy. There's always two results to the gospel. There's always two results to the gospel being presented. You have the unbelievers, and you have it'll be a sanctuary, or it's going to be a snare. And many among them shall stumble and fall and be broken and be snared and be taken. Then he says, bind up the testimony and seal the law among my disciples. That's Isaiah 8:16. So the epilogue is Daniel, who would have been about 18 or 20. The king said, of a truth, your God is a God. But he didn't quite have a belief that you get when you're born again yet. And he made Daniel a great man. But the message here was one of the Messiah. The message was of Christ. But he didn't get that. He just saw, oh, my kingdom is going to be taken away from me if I don't do something. So there you have it. So that'll be the end of our lesson for today. So be free because of the stone cut without hands. A side note there is, if you go back to Exodus chapter 20, when God commanded them to make the altar, what did he say? He says, if you will make me an altar of stone and you will not build it of hewn stone, it will not come from the work of men. If you lift up thy tool upon it, you've polluted it. Works and grace are not compatible. So thank you, and be free again.